AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
This morning, and I want to introduce one of my good friends, guy I've had the privilege to coach next to the last, 4 years?
4 years.
Going on five, and time goes quickly. At the junior college level with Coach Andy Smith. Quick intro for him. He, over the last 4 years, you're the head coach at Chaffey College, right? In Rancho Cucamonga. Back-to-back-to-back conference champions. Never done before.
Not since 07, I think, is the last time they had a three-peat.
There was a three-peat in 07?
I think 05, 6, and 7, or 6, 7, 8. Yeah.
Three? Oh, okay. So I'm mistaken.
Yeah. I can't take all the credit.
Chaffey College, home of Raleigh Fingers.
Yes. Yes. Our claim to fame.
Yeah. We should have a Raleigh Fingers mustache day.
Should. Not anymore, but that would have been good.
Still can. We could try it. Oh, I guess not. Yeah. The Owls could do it now. So now it's Citrus. But if you want to take a little bit of time to introduce yourself, you know, your experience in the game as a player, coach, et cetera, et cetera. And then we'll just kind of go from there.
You know, something I was sharing with our guys. So I just took over the program at Citrus College, if anyone doesn't know that. And I was just sharing with our guys last week, you know, this game requires everything from you. And there's an entry fee, and every player, every coach has an entry fee in this game, and it's different. Everyone's is a little bit different. And mine was really unique. My baseball journey was long-winded and unique, and it wasn't a story of just overwhelming success, but kind of the opposite. A lot of struggle and adversity that I had to go through and learn how to kind of pick myself back up and keep fighting and keep pushing my way through until I kind of got a seat at the table. You know, I played junior college ball in Santa Barbara. I spent a year at Dixie State University, which is now Utah Tech. They're a great program when I was there at the Division II level. They're now D1. And then I finished my career at Biola University and loved my experience there. Got into coaching at Biola shortly after. Was there a few years. Knew I wanted to coach at the JC level. I had a goal of being a head JC coach. Just something that was meaningful to me. Kind of land of second opportunities or second chances, and place for guys who are overlooked and, you know, have a chip on their shoulder, have a unique story. And so I really resonate with the JC level a lot. So I got over at Chaffey College. I was an assistant there for 2 years. COVID hit. I took over the program when we came out of COVID, and was there for 4 years and just got the job over at Citrus.
Yeah. And it's been fun to watch that all. Somewhat from the sidelines, watching that kind of evolve since, you know, the post-COVID 2021, 22 years. And just, you know, I remember having conversations during those times and even up to, you know, as recently as the spring of this past season, you know, how do we continue and how do you continue to build upon a program and get better? And that's what I've always really kind of admired about you, that you see growth opportunity. You know, every time you hit a new level, per se, right, or so to speak, where you see a team get to a certain point and you're like, okay, this is pretty good. We have a pretty good group. How do we make this even better next year? And so on and so forth. And that resonates with me, you know, because I think within, you know, our program that we run from a travel ball perspective, and I know a little bit more about what you feel about travel ball, and I really you know, from a travel ball perspective and with our program, you know, how we can get even better with what we do, you know, on a different scale when we're thinking about players for what we do in different areas of different ages, you know, they're all trying to get to the college level. But since, you know, we were engaging in a conversation away from, you know, the recording aspect of this conversation, I kind of want to feed off that a little bit on like your take of, you know, on, you know, the whole travel ball industry perspective and what you really think about that. And I think that the people listening in might find that I'm not too, my thoughts and feelings aren't too different. So,
I'm not anti-travel ball by any means.
Hey, hold on.
I will explain what I am against, but you know, travel ball as a whole isn't the problem, right? I think, you know, there are people who are involved in travel ball that, you know, have really good intentions. And I think they're formulas that do a really great job, like CBA. CBA's formula is a program-wide development perspective. And you're trying to espouse values and a culture throughout the entirety of the program with the purpose of player development and teaching them baseball skills that translate to success within the scope of their high school teams or their college teams. And so that's what it should be. And a byproduct of that is called recruiting opportunities. That's great. Like that's awesome. I think amateur sports as a whole, and especially baseball, has taken too drastic of a turn towards the goal being college scholarship. And I get it. Life is expensive. It's not easy out there. College is expensive, but when the goal is primarily get a college scholarship and not develop skills as a player and as a person that will translate to lifelong success, that's when I feel like things have taken a turn for the worse. And again, this is a generalization. I understand there are programs like CBA and others out there that I think do a really good job. But I see it all the time. I'm a private sector guy as well. I've been for 10 years. And when it seems like the parents are the driving force of, I need my child to get a college scholarship, and that's the primary goal, we're creating a whole bag of problems, because that player, whether or not the player is aware of it, the parents are aware of it, they're really going to feel that external pressure. And now they're driven externally by, I don't want to disappoint my parents, and my parents are putting all this in. And so it's this transactional, oh, they did all this for me, so I have to do this for them. I have to get to this point for them. And by the time they get to junior college and like, hey, I'm not at USC or you know, Florida State, there's this cognitive dissonance that they're really faced with and realizing, hey, I'm actually not where, you know, my parents and I were hoping I would be 4 years ago when I was coming into high school, or even before then when I was going to Cooperstown and, you know, I was traveling to Georgia and Texas and Colorado and all these things with these delusions of grandeur saying, I'm going to be the next big leaguer, or my parents want me to be the next big leaguer, or at least Division I superstar. And it's not a realistic goal. It's not. And that doesn't mean it doesn't happen and can't happen. I just don't think that should be the primary driving force of why kids play the game.
Yeah. And I have different feelings surrounding that as well too. I almost feel like now post COVID, a lot, and I feel like it has to do with having more persistence as a kid and as a player. I feel like a lot of kids may have more opportunity to play at those higher, you know, collegiate upper echelon levels if they just stay with it, right? Uh-huh. Because now it's, you know, you're not locked in to, especially when you go to a four-year program, you're not locked in for 4 years like you used to. You can actually perform really well 1 year and move on to where, you know, at a lower division school, and then move on to a Division I program just by putting up numbers, you know, 1 year.
Yeah.
So I actually think it's more obtainable now to get to that point for a lot of kids than it would have pre-COVID or pre-portal, right? And it's taking a different perspective of like how you want that journey to look like. Like, you got to be okay with going to, you know, junior college, then maybe a D2 school, and then, you know, and going, moving around a little bit before you get there, which you see that happen, I think, year in and year out now.
I think it really sucks for the D2 and D3 coaches who are trying to build programs and trying to retain their players. And man, I don't envy the position they're in, because they get a really good freshman who, they found, and the D1's overlooked, and they developed these guys who become superstars for them. And hey, thanks so much for a great freshman year. With that being said,
yeah.
I'm going to enter the transfer portal. And yes, like you're right. You it's different now, where you don't have to be that going into college to get to that level. And you don't have to go to the JC route to get to that level. But man, like going to a four-year school with the intention of moving on to somewhere bigger and better, quote unquote, man, that sucks.
It does.
Those coaches.
It does. But I think just like, unfortunately, it's just like the evolution of how the sport has kind of gone, which in many ways, I think it's a good thing, because it pushes kids to players to maybe work just a little bit harder, because they do see like that carrot that's dangling in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I feel for those guys too. But don't you think that, like, if I'm a Division II, Division III program, or a coach at even, a lower and mid major, that you can use that as a selling point to get kids in, and not say like that's probably the best way to go about it, but don't you think like that's, it's something that, those
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Colleges or those programs could, little tool in their tool.
Yeah, like I definitely see some schools promote that. Like, hey, here, I think, who was it in the College World Series? One of the shortstops, I think, came from Sac State, Arkansas, or one of those Power Four programs. And like Sac State's proud of that. And I think that's really cool. That's kind of steering into the skid and recognizing, hey, you know what? We could find and develop these potential future first, second round picks, but they might not stay here. And no one's going to say that, a place like Sac State, whom I have a ton of respect for, I think they do a fantastic job, but no one's going to say that's the same as LSU in terms of what that player experience is and who they're playing in front of. And so I think the coaches that almost lean into that are probably going to be the ones who are most successful and almost run their programs combining, a four-year with a junior college process. And I think that's a whole new animal that's challenging, but yes, can be a benefit to the recruiting process.
It's almost like you have to lean into that, because, you're going to recruit kids. They're going to come in and then they're going to leave anyways. You know, they're going to be searching for those opportunities anyway. So you might as well be a promoter in that.
Yeah.
And then maintain that relationship with them long-term.
Mm-hmm.
Because you were serving them.
Yeah.
Good
point.
But yeah, I guess that's my take on that. But yeah, I think as a coach, if I'm a four-year coach from a traditional, I call it traditional, but pre-COVID, with that type of perspective of having a kid for 3 or 4 years, and then you have kids that now are, it's a revolving door that almost every program with guys coming in, guys leaving every single year.
Yeah.
That is a little bit discouraging, because you want to win, right? And it's really hard to build a program long-term if you don't have, championship level players, year in, year out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm speaking to, colleges over the summer, and, some guys, they feel that discouragement as well. We've developed this guy for 2-3 years, and, now he's moving on to, a Power Four program. And, they feel like there's like that disloyalty sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, from my perspective, like, okay, well, let's let's embrace this process now, and it won't feel so personal, you know. So
That's such a good point. And then you have the stories like Morehead State, a mid-major that no one's really ever heard of that had such a fantastic run this year. Or not Morehead State, Murray State, excuse me. And such a cool story, and those Cinderella kind of stories that you really root for. And I didn't pay attention to how many of those players went in the portal, but he seems like a coach that those guys really loved playing for. And so I think when you do things the right way and you really take care of your players and you show that you care about them and you show that, hey, we can have success and you can have individual success and the team success. And I think you can retain players that way. But it requires a lot.
Well, a couple other things. So one, I want to, talk about one, the type of player you recruit. Eventually, I want to get into some hitting, which is, I think, the big thing I think I wanted to kind of go over. But I do wanted to go over the type of players you like to recruit, the type of players that stick at the college level, right? That stick at even the junior college level, the level you're at, and then the programs that you run. And how they could be successful at that level.
Cool. Type of players I try to recruit. So I think there's a disconnect between high school baseball and junior college baseball in this sense of like who should be playing junior college baseball or who gets to, essentially be impact players at that level. A lot of people think, oh, I wasn't good enough to get recruited, so I'm just going to go to junior college and be a starter. It really doesn't work that way. I'm going for the players that Cal State Fullerton might be going for, not going for, but evaluating, kind of interested in, had some conversations, don't quite have enough room for this guy. He's not quite there, but he's close. You know what I mean? And maybe a Division II school really likes, he has a scholarship offer for him. But this guy, wants to go junior college route because he has Division I aspirations, maybe. I want the best possible athlete and player that we can get. It's not the guy who didn't really play a lot for his high school program. It's not the 9-hole, 5'3" second baseman that, barely hits the ball out of the infield. Those aren't actually junior college guys. But I think a lot of coaches and parents and players see, oh, he's a good JC guy. Not really. Not really. We have great athletes at this level that are maybe a little bit behind from the baseball skill perspective, or it's kind of a sliding scale, or you have really high level players with regards to skill that are maybe behind athletically. And so our job is to try to elevate one of those areas in which they're deficient to help them become a more complete player. And at the end of the day, I want good people. I'm big on culture. I'm big on character. I spend a lot of time with these guys every day, more time than I do with my own wife and son. And so I want to enjoy who they are. I want them to enjoy the process that we have, and just people that enjoy being on the field. I can't fathom guys who are sitting there going, oh, practice is too long. When do we get to go home? Like, you shouldn't be playing college baseball if you ever feel that way. Not to say you're not tired some days. I get tired too. But I want baseball junkies that just love to be out there. They love competing with their guys and they want to be the very best they can be.
Right. And what I've, again, I think what I've noticed too from the last 4 years of being around you and being around the programs that you lead, I've also noticed a difference year in and year out of the type of player just kind of gets better as to who actually walks in on campus in the fall. So that's a testament again to your leadership and what you've been able to create in the programs you run, but also I think players are starting to recognize that, and again, post portal, post COVID, the 20 round draft has been in effect for several years now, so that creates impact across the entire college landscape. But just to kind of not dumb it down, but I want to say 2 years ago, the types of players that were getting recruited at the junior college level are not as good as they are now, right? They are much better now. If you're getting Division I athletes at the junior college level out of high school versus like 2 to 3 years ago, it wasn't
Guys who would not have been here.
Right. And sometimes people ask, like, well, what's the difference at Chafee, when you were at Chafee or when I was coming around at Chafee, what's the difference now versus, 2 years ago? And I'm thinking, well, in my, and I'll respond that I really believe that, maybe not all the way through the entire roster, everyone is a D1, D2 player or athlete, but I do believe that the starting nine had a chance to play on those types of teams a couple years ago, if they were playing a couple years ago. Now those guys coming out of high school, and I think about a couple players that were recruited to go to Chafee that didn't quite pan out for whatever reason. It could be physicality, could be mentality, but I think they have that ability to play at the upper echelon levels, Division I baseball, professional baseball. But now they're here at this level, or they didn't even make it. They came and they didn't stick. So coming out of high school, I think, I don't know if you've listened to any of the previous, episodes, podcasts, whatever you want to call this, meetings that we hosted on, that we put on the podcast. But
Just bits and pieces.
Yeah, we've talked about, in past conversations, not with you, but with the other people on this podcast, you gotta check all the boxes. You gotta come out of high school. You gotta be physical. You gotta be a good player, skill wise, fundamentally, right? You gotta have the mentality. And so, not to ramble on too long and not to be too confusing about this, but if you get a player that comes in, right, that has good skill but isn't quite physical, like, what do you do to get them to catch up to be more physical? And what do you do if you get an athlete that comes in? What do you get them to do to become more skillful?
Yeah, I mean that's the challenge, especially at our level. We're going to have a larger fall roster than the D1s and D2s. Just the nature of the beast. These guys aren't signing anything, and so we don't know who's actually going to show up day one of fall. And so it's a large number of guys that we're trying to create an environment that allows for the individualization of their development while also developing the team-wide skill set. For a guy who's maybe underdeveloped physically, but has some skill, like, hey, this was the starting third baseman for a high school, nearby that, they're a playoff team, a CIF playoff team. But he's just undersized. Like, is he good enough to play and contribute this year? Yeah, like he probably is. But what I try to do is help him understand what is the long-term big picture goal here. It's you're coming to junior college to get to somewhere bigger and better. We're gonna look at this from the lens of a four-year school and how they recruit. And you might be a quality player. You might hit 330 for us, but if you're small, if you don't look the part, you're gonna have a harder time getting recruited. And so the best way we can do that is utilize a redshirt year and just allow the natural maturation process to kick in. And I think of guys like Donovan Jackson, Donnie, our left-handed pitcher at Chafee. In 22, he redshirted for us. Not that he wasn't good enough to pitch for us, but he threw 78. He was a
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Twig, he'd never really lifted much. We knew he was going to be pretty good. His next year, he was a starter for us. He had a good year. At that point, if he was a sophomore, and he was getting recruited, he probably would have gone to a quality Division II program. But he had another year, and he actually trained at Legends that summer. He came back upper 80s, and he got a full ride to UC Santa Barbara. And we saw he was one of the best relief pitchers in the country this year. That guy utilized a redshirt year. It's not that he wouldn't have been good enough to pitch that year. It's that he was one additional year maybe away from being able to be recruited at the level he was capable of going to. And so I think kids get scared of the R word, the red shirt year, but it's such a valuable opportunity, and guys who utilize it correctly, they look back on and say, yeah, that was the right move for me. And then with regards to the skill, it's you got a good athlete who is lacking skill. Maybe it is a red shirt year, but more often than not, it's going to be just more structured one-on-one work with whether that's the swing, maybe it's mechanically on the mound. But it's kind of a case-by-case situation there.
Yeah, and I agree. Appreciate the shout out to Legends too. Cheers.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and Donnie was great. You know, and him specifically, I think he just had the attitude and the seeing things through the lens of having a broader perspective towards the big picture, right? The big picture for him is honestly, he has a chance to be a professional, baseball player, lefty specialist, even that plays a long time. And that starts with the decision of being okay with maybe taking that red shirt and that red shirt year and being process oriented, right? And so, I think about some of our graduating seniors this year that really, they're, with CBA that we're going to these team camps and we're hosting these team camps. And, we got to provide those opportunities. I actually think a lot of our players have the chance to play at these types of programs at 4-year schools out of high school. But is that going to be the best route for everybody? Obviously not. And then I've even with some of our players, just because of the way things have gone from, with the portal and how it impacts rosters is. And I want to kind of maybe get your take on this. The gap year. How do you feel about a gap year?
You know, like anything else, it could be great, it could be bad. It just depends on how it's utilized, right? I'm not anti-gap year programs by any means. I think, like anything else, what you put into it is what you're going to get out of it. And the idea of taking a gray shirt year, not starting your clock, that makes a lot of sense. What we're seeing in amateur sports is these kids are being held back. You know, eighth graders are instead of going into high school, they're repeating eighth grade, so they're a year older than the freshmen they're competing against. Like when I was coming up,
Shout out Legends again.
yes, okay, yeah, yes. Which like when I was coming up, that was unheard of. Like you wanted to play up, not down. You know what I mean? I wanted to play against older guys, not younger guys. But from a recruiting perspective, and in terms of putting yourself at the best advantage to be successful, yeah, it makes a ton of sense.
So now I like my take. So the reason I bring that up is because you see, and this is probably going to change in the next year or two. But you're still like, we still have guys at the 4-year level that are like 24, 25 years old,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
So you're coming out as a 17, 18 year old and you're
Good
okay.
luck.
Yeah. So like,
Good luck.
talk about playing up, right? That's, and I think that, if we want to try to even out that playing field, some kids, if you really want to play college baseball, and I'm not saying that obviously this isn't for everybody, but maybe not starting clock and taking that gap year might be a good idea. I'm not saying it's for everybody, obviously, but it's something that I think that if we need to evolve with the times, and this wasn't on the docket to talk about, but
That's okay.
since it kind of just went that direction, I've talked to specific players and families regarding, okay, what are, if we're looking long term, if we're looking longevity in the sport, what are the best options? And we can't rule this one out, especially if they're undersized or skill level isn't quite there. But if again, if they take that year, and I do actually compare that to like the eighth grader getting held back and redoing eighth grade, it's just like another chance to take, make the most out of the next 12 months. And so, we do with CBA have those kids, and at Legends, we run that charter school where we do have those kids that are redoing eighth grade. And I do think for a lot of them, it's going to serve them well because they have intention about it. And then you have the kids that are just there just to, because they think that, it's just going to come to them. But, going back to how to make more skilled players, at the college level, what I really like about you as a coach is your attention to detail across the board, but more specifically how you work with hitters. I've always been very selective on on, especially with hitting, right? I've been around some pretty good, pretty well-known hitting guys over the years as a player and as a coach.
One in particular.
Yeah.
That
So
guy was pretty good.
yeah, he was good. But the if you watching you work and you're and people ask me like, oh, well, what makes, you know, Andy or Coach Smith a good hitting coach? And to me, it's as simple as, well, one, he cares, right? He cares enough to see guys be successful, right? So he's gonna force you to be successful, like if you're around him, right? Which I
I
really,
try, yeah.
yeah, I mean, like players don't really have a choice, which you know, they're gonna be successful with the bat if they're around you long enough. And two, like you have the communication skill set to take what's in your brain, put it into words, apply it to drill work, and then be able to critique or coach guys through how they could be more successful in their execution rate. So talking about that one, the type of hitter you recruit specifically, hitters, and then how you get them to become even better at that.
Yeah, appreciate the kind words there. What kind of hitters do we recruit? Well, some things that I look for are the same things that like 4-year coaches look for out of junior college guys, which is you want to have guys with minimal swing and miss in high school. Like the walk to strikeout ratio is a big one for me, as and one of the reasons for that is it's a big one for the coaches that are recruiting our guys. I've seen, you know, coaches pass on my guys because they just strike out a little bit too much. And if they're going to strike out at our level, they're certainly going to strike out against Division I pitching or whatever, Division II pitching. So that's a big one. You look for guys that move well. You can make adjustments with good movers a lot easier than really stiff, tight movers that, you know, don't really know what their body's doing in space, that don't really have that kinesthetic awareness to make the adjustments. And you don't necessarily know that just from watching a kid one time, but there's certain things that, you know, you watch enough hitters, you're around hitting enough, you start to see some consistencies and inconsistencies in what you're wanting and looking at. You know, guys with the ability to just barrel baseballs, they don't need to hit the ball a mile. That's nice. But if they do that once every 30 at bats and the other 20 they're punching out or popping up, you know, that doesn't really do a ton for me. Is there something in there that I think is an easy minimal fix? Because if they're really, really good, they're not coming to JUCO, right? They're going to get snatched up. And so we're going to get hitters that are missing something. They're either missing some bat speed and just not quite physical enough. They're missing the ability to recognize spin, which that's a tough one. Like that could be just a vision thing. The ability to stay inside the baseball, right? They come around the ball a ton and everything they hit is pulse side. Like, you know, that's maybe something a little easier for me to work with. And so just identifying what they do well, what they don't do well, and is the thing that they don't do well something that I'm confident that our systems here can, I don't want to say easily, but moderately easily correct.
Yeah, and I think the systems that you have in place. I mean, I've, you know, last year I wasn't around a ton, but I think the variations of drill work that you have that you incorporate into a system. I think because it keeps it a little spicy, it keeps players, hitters specifically, it keeps them motivated. It keeps them engaged. It keeps them because there's just such a wide variety of the types of drills or how you incorporate them, like the variations of tee work and some type of toss or some type of live batting practice. And even when you had like double barrel batting practice the other day or triple barrel, whatever,
Triple, yeah.
triple barrel batting practice,
Triple barrel
right?
BP.
That like, just gets guys excited about coming to the field and wanting to get their swings in, you know,
Yeah.
and the culture surrounding that, where you are. And I had a at a meeting earlier this morning regarding the charter school and like the culture and like celebrating each other's victories and successes. And then just the culture that that's, you know, that you've created and have cultivated surrounding just hitting, you know, and like setting the expectation. So like if every hitter typically knows, right, when guys are fulfilling a plan or, you know, they're doing their job, right? And then when they're doing that, you know, everybody else typically applauds, right, the guys that are succeeding. So I see the whole thing from like a macro perspective, I think. Like I'm not, you know, and I like working with hitters too. But you know, when I go to the field and I see like that, or I go to the field at Chafee one time now Citrus, but and I see that culture is being reinforced. You know, guys tend to I think they tend to thrive upon each other's successes, and then, you know, they want to, you know, raise the bar. So, but just drills in particular, right? If we want to get down into like the details, right? The drill, what kind of drills do you like, guys? Like if we're thinking about who's really listening to this right now, how can guys get better at home? If they have limited resources.
Well, let me back up real quick. Just talking about that, thriving on each other's success, something that, you know, we share in our program constantly. Something I really drive home with these guys is, hey, you are not competing against each other. I don't want you operating that kind of sphere. Your job is not to compete against, you know, Coach Joe. Your job is to compete against yourself. You're trying to be better than you were yesterday. And when everyone is bought into this concept of just continuous gradual self-improvement, it raises the bar. And when you see your teammate do well, you know, you have one of two options, a guy that, you know, plays a similar position. You can either go, shoot, like, man, that's going to negatively affect my opportunities. Or you can look at it and say, sweet, my turn. Watch this. Like I'm going to raise the bar there. So I think it's really important for youth players, amateur players, to understand this concept of your job is not to beat anyone else out for a job. Like, yes. And I understand depth charts and how that works, but if your perspective is, I need to just consistently grow and get better, put my head down and focus on my own process, it's going to yield the results you want because it's all internal. You're not looking externally. You're not distracted or feeling any kind of extrinsic pressure. And yeah, I think it just improves the overall feel of the team when we're all celebrating each other's success. Okay. The question you asked though, what can players do to get better with limited resources? Was that your question?
And so the reason I asked too is because multiple conversations, and I deal with, you know, kids younger than you typically deal with more regularly, right? So, you know, the player I'm typically around is 17, 18 years old, still in high school, mm-hmm. right? Down to, you know, 11, 12 years old. And I'm not around the 11, 12 year olds as much as I'm around the older ones, but I still come around. But the 17 year old, the 16 year old, 15 year old, right? The high school player, you know, I've had numerous conversations this week where it's like, okay, you know, why can't you get to batting practice? And it's not like, hey, you know, I'm coming down on you. I really want to know, like, what's the reason you can't get to batting practice? Oh, I don't have a ride. Okay. I understand that. Okay. How can we get you a ride? Right. So really like, I don't have this, there's some type of reason. So most of the time it's an excuse, right? Because we could probably find you a ride if you speak up, or do you have the ability to seek out hitting lessons? And then it's sometimes, so financially we can't afford. Okay. I understand that too. What can guys do, you know, at home on their own that, you know, may be helpful for them, you know, if they really can't do these extra things?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's great. I love the, I put this on our post about triple barrel BP. Those who hit a lot, hit a lot. If you want to be a successful hitter, you have to hit, and you have to hit consistently every single day. You have to find a way to put in work every day. That doesn't mean you need to go to a hitting coach or, be on the field every single day, but you need to be doing something. And so the best thing that anyone can do is buy a tee and a net and some baseballs, and in the garage, in their backyard, in the front yard, whatever it is, and hit off a tee. Seeing ball flight is great. Like in a perfect world, you could see the ball flight. I'm a big advocate of that. But if you're limited space and resources, a tee, a net, and a dozen baseballs, hit for an hour every single day. If you do that, you absolutely will become a better hitter.
Mm-hmm.
But it requires long-term consistency. And then I guess, like, if I'm going to break down hitting at its most fundamental level, if someone were to ask me, like, hey, Coach Andy, like, what do you believe in with regards to coaching hitters? What do you think hitters need to do? They need to be able to control their barrel at its most fundamental level. Good hitters have good barrel control. How do you learn to have good barrel control? Well, you need to train accordingly. You need to hit off a tee consistently. You need to build movements and get into positions that allow you to enter the hitting zone in a strong position, quick to the baseball, long through it. And you can build those movement patterns simply off of a tee.
Yeah. And I'm glad we're having this conversation, and we scheduled this conversation today because you have a rough idea of like what my schedule looked like yesterday. And I was at BP in Santa Ana last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was throwing to this one hitter in particular. And I mean, we started with tee work. They went through some type of extra drill work. And then we went into like just high below machine work, which for this month, it's like, that's what we're trying to focus on with our program, is just getting guys to catch up to high velos. So he's swinging and missing, swinging and missing, swinging and missing. And then we go into live BP and I start throwing. And I think I probably threw this kid 60 pitches, like this one hitter, right? Probably 60 pitches, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's swinging and missing, swinging and missing. So then I just had this conversation with him after I started feeling the soreness. And I said, hey, how many times did you pick up the bat between Monday and Wednesday this week to get work in? And he looked at me and he just shakes his head. It's like, none.
Right.
So you think getting 200 swings in today, and where you're swinging, he's going to make you a better hitter. Mm-hmm. And that thing, and that's, I think, what the typical common player at that age thinks is going to happen. Like, they go to practice once or twice a week and they get concentrated work for an hour or two. That's really all it takes to get to, whatever they want to get to. And I just remember thinking, well, okay, well, this is your last round because I can't feel my elbow anymore. So I didn't say it like that, but I was like, hey, maybe just think about shutting it down here soon so that you don't create any more bad habits.
I think any private sector coach can relate to this process of, or this scenario of, this kid comes and hits with me once a week,
mm-hmm.
30 minutes for an hour, maybe. And then, mom or dad sends videos. Hey, little Johnny is still struggling. You know, can we work on this in the next session? Like, yeah, sure, totally. We can work on that. And then little Johnny rolls in. You could tell he has absolutely no interest in being there, very mm-hmm. limited interest in being there. And the question then becomes, like, what are you doing in between Monday and Monday? When we hit on Mondays, like, what are you doing for the rest of the week? Oh, well, I have my team hitting practice on Wednesday. Okay, how many swings are you getting in? Oh, I don't know, 3-4 rounds. Like, it needs to be a daily thing. If it's not a daily thing, I'm not going to say you're going to get worse, but you're not going to get better at the trajectory that anyone is hoping you do, including yourself.
Yeah. And I tell our guys, the things you should be doing daily: hitting, catch play of some sort every single day if you can.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, a day off here and there is not going to kill you, So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, and that's why I like being around it, because you understand the importance of a lot of these things. Your drill work is good. Typically the guys that I send you, or, if we set you up with hitting groups, they get better.
Mm-hmm.
You've worked with really good guys that have, moved on to the Division I and professional level now. And having you around our players has been a privilege. I think they don't realize the type of privilege they have when they come to work with you. And so going forward, I hope that they start to, maybe pick your brain a little bit once they're around you more. And No, I just really appreciate the, you know, the care that you put into, you know, one, obviously the guys that you work with on a daily basis at Citrus, but then, you know, outside of that, I think that people, they do appreciate coaches like that, that just care at the end of the day. So,
Thank you. Likewise.
yeah, but not to drag this on too long. So, is there any close, you want any, you have any closing remarks?
Jeez, that's a loaded question. No, I mean this was great. I appreciate it. Thanks for you know, always being in my corner and being a great resource for me, a great advocate of mine, and always providing me avenues to get better as a coach. I learned a lot watching how you run things with CBA, and you know, I think the world, the amateur sports world would be a better place if everyone was just focused on finding ways to get better and kind of removing the ego from that process and saying, hey, I don't have all the answers and that's okay. I don't need to have all the answers, but let's seek out more answers so we can better help more players.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Well, thanks for being on this call, this meeting. It's probably going to be published in like an hour,
Sweet.
so you can hear yourself
Oh boy.
contribute.
I don't hear myself talk enough.
It's kind of interesting listening to yourself over like on a recorded anything when you're having like for me like the first time like because I tried to early on like back in during the pandemic I tried to have conversations with guys. Or people or individuals in the sport where I can learn a lot from. But then I'm hearing myself talk and I'm like, I don't like the way I sound.
Yeah,
And so
same. Yeah.
but I gotta like I gotta improve, you know, that sound. So
I think everyone feels that way, listening to themselves like on an answering machine or if they're recorded. Yeah, everyone hates how they sound.
yeah. And so it's like shoot, like I don't think anybody's gonna want to listen to this. So then I had to force myself to hear me talk and then try to find ways to improve. And then hopefully I'm getting better, but we'll see.
I love that though. Like that's what leaders and coaches and you know, that's what we should be doing is evaluating our own work and listening to how we sound and finding ways to, you know, communicate better. If, you know, you mentioned communication earlier, like what is coaching other than communication? Like you can have all the knowledge in the world, but if you can't communicate it effectively, what good are you actually
Been
doing?
around those too as a player
Yeah.
where you're just scratching your head like what did I what how do I apply everything that I didn't learn today?
Correct.
Yeah, I'm
Oh,
gonna
that's awesome. I love that.
that
I'm gonna put that on a t-shirt.
well no I appreciate the time
Yeah.
this probably went longer than I said it would
That's all right.
typically I think it kind of does when you engage in good conversation and
Yeah.
but yeah look forward to seeing you on the field this next week
Cool. Thanks, Jared.
And thanks for everything you do, and I will we'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate you, sir. Thanks,
All
man.
right. Have a good day.
All right. See you.